Friday Report with Lucy Morgan on Isle of Wight Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the programme. This is the Friday Report. It's 11 minutes after one. On the show today, then, a budget special. A host of councillors here to take your questions and put your comments to. We've got Councillor Jonathan Bacon and Steve Stubbings, leader and deputy leader of the Isle of Wight Council. Dave Stewart is here. He's Conservative group leader, and Jill Kennett, who's the chair of the Isle of Wight Association of Local Councils, among many other things. Jill, actually, we'll have a chat in a minute, but Freshwater Parish Council, an MBE for services to healthcare and the community, involved with challenge and adventure. It's a very, very long list by Jill's name there. So you can give us your comments, you can ask your questions on numerous ways. You can text us, IW, a space, and your message. Send it into 81222. You can call us over the next 50 minutes or so, 822002 here in the studio. You can tweet at IY Radio or head to our Facebook page and leave your question there. When we come back, we will be talking budgets.
The Friday Report. Getting to the heart of island issues. Isle of Wight Radio. This is the Friday Report.
Welcome to the show, 16 minutes after one, and welcome to the studio, all of our panellists today. Good afternoon, everybody.
Afternoon, Lucy.
So it's a budget special. I wanted to start by just setting out the scale of the problem. This is a headline that we've heard a few times over the last few months. Just if you can, one of you, maybe Jonathan, Steve, maybe just set out the scale of the issue facing you and how much money you have to save.
Well, if I give you a few figures... If we look at the position from 2011 to 2016, government grants have been reduced by about 33 million. That equates to about 30% of the island's money. We've also had increased costs of about 30 million. So in real terms, we're out of pocket by about 60 million pounds. That has not been assisted by council tax, which is capped at the moment. We've had freezes in past years. That means our income from that source has only gone up by about 3%. The net effect of that, without boring you too much with a load more figures, is that we have to save £14.5 million this year. We've already had to go through savings of, I think it's £35, £36 million. That's not going to be the end of it. There's another £8.5 million that will have to be shaved off the budget next year. So it is meaning that we're having to cut back. What we are trying to do as an administration, though, is to make sure that those cutbacks are done in such a way as to cause least damage, maintain what we see as the priorities, but also in going through that process to try and create and partnerships, work with other people to make sure that services are maintained as far as possible, but the burden is taken off the council because we simply don't have the money for a lot of these things now.
OK, Dave Stewart, I'll bring you in here. You're the Conservative group leader, the second biggest group, if you like, on the council there. Your thoughts on the budget as we head towards this crunch meeting?
My first thought is I feel like a rose between two thorns because I've got Jonathan on one side and Steve on the other. But on a more serious note, I think the reality of the budget situation compared with perhaps if I was being a little bit political, the aspirations of the independent group when they first came in and now there. And I have to be honest, I don't think when you look at the budget papers that we as a Conservative group would be doing a great deal different.
That's
to
very
what
honest.
Is there now. Well, as Jonathan rightly points out, when you come to as close as we are to what we can and can't do, the statutory things become so overwhelming that the discretion is very limited. So you have to be realistic. The only thing I'd say, I think there are also opportunities if we look at how we do things differently rather than just what we cut. And maybe that's where, and we're certainly looking at how we can work, what I've always on about really is working more closely together for the benefit of the islands and just accepting that there are some things we can do, some things we can't.
Jill, you come at this from a very different point of view. You're from the Local Government Association. Just tell me a little bit about where you are in relation to the rest of this. You're on Freshwater Parish
yes.
Council.
Yeah, I think where we are with the town and parish councils is that we've had quite a lot of negotiation and discussion from the Isle of Wight Council. It's been quite clearly laid out the things that they can continue to support and those things, the discretionary services that can't be supported through the budget anymore for the reasons that Jonathan and Dave have just highlighted. I think what we've have had to do is really go back to the people we represent in the town and parish councils and ask them what's really important to them.
I see you very kindly. I shall jump in. You very kindly didn't correct me, but I said local government association. Of course, you're
IWOW.
IWOW.
Yeah,
which
I'm
is
not
the
as lofty as that.
No, Isle of Wight Association of Local Councils. So you're representing town and parish councils.
Yes.
Do you feel like things are being sort of passed down the chain? So people, it's almost like people, you know, if the local council does it, the parish council does it, and the main council doesn't, people might not notice it. So if you sort of leave it to them to fund services locally, maybe no one will notice that things have changed.
I think certainly at the beginning, when we realised that possibly quite a lot of services were going to be passed down to us, there was a feeling of being a bit done unto. But then when you think about it in retrospect, the grass has got to be cut, the beaches have got to be cleaned, and we have to maintain those things that are really precious to our residents, libraries, community halls, a lot of things that go on. I mean, the beach cleaning one is a particularly interesting one because a lot of towns and parishes are in the middle of Newport, nowhere near a beach. But it was interesting to see that they were still quite keen to support that beach cleaning contract.
Some of them were.
Not all of them, but you wouldn't expect that. It's the Isle of Wight.
Which ones didn't?
We're not going to name names.
No.
Well, we know that that Newport did.
Yes, Newport certainly did. And
so
right,
which ones didn't? Which ones are blind to the fact that of a sunny weekend, the residents nip off to the beach closest to them?
I think that's a bit, probably a bit judgmental on that. Yeah. If I'm paying a precept in my community, I'm probably thinking I'm paying my money for things in my community. If I'm paying my council tax, I think I'm paying for island-wide services. So I don't judge those that didn't want to in that way, but you make a valid point. A lot of island residents use a lot of services, such as the beach.
I think Dave's just identified part of the problem.
Yes.
See, lots of residents think that their council tax pays for all these services, and it absolutely doesn't. Council tax just about pays for adult social care and a little bit of children's services. That's all. So the rest of the funding that comes in, one way or another, through government grants or income that the Isle of Wight Council generates, actually has to top that up and pay for a lot of the other things. See, I've always been of the view, Lucy, and I'm the one mostly from the Isle of Wight Council that went out and had these discussions with towns and parishes, some of them more constructive than others. And thankfully, I'm sitting next to a local councillor here who was always prepared to engage in the discussion from the get-go. But the fact is, this money comes from the public in any case, however you know, whether it comes out of your local precept or out of your council tax. And given that council tax is currently capped, the government has told us that without a referendum, we can't go past the 1.99%. We had to find some other way of raising this revenue. So in some ways, I'm always a little bit kind of surprised by the reaction that people come up with that, well, look, now they're just taking it out of our local precept. Well, it just comes out of a different pot, as it were, but it's still public money. It's all coming from the public, and that's their local taxes to pay for the delivery of local services. And if we could get around that, I think it would be a lot more helpful.
All right. Well, we're here to talk specifics. I've got a very effectively weighty document here. It's changed a few times. And on here, pretty much every service you can think of up for some kind of cut or some kind of change. The one we're going to open up with is fire and rescue, because Hampshire have been having a meeting. The Hampshire Fire Authority have been having a meeting today to decide whether or not to move forward with this strategic partnership. It's going to see the departure of the Isle of Wight's Chief Fire Officer, Steve Apter, who's going to go to Hampshire. He's going to relocate under this strategic partnership. The Isle of Wight will only have a senior fire officer, and that person will report to a Hampshire-based head of a joint, effectively, fire and rescue service. Now, if this was a business merger, I'd be looking at this saying, well, the Isle of Wight just got bought out, didn't it?
But would you say that about the police? Because that's already what happens. In the police, Hampshire and the Isle of Wight comes under Hampshire Police. The senior superintendent on the Isle of Wight reports to the senior team of the police in Hampshire. But practically, in practical terms, if you go to PC Smith or PCSO Jones, they are the local cops who patrol the local streets. So I think that's where it differs from private business, is actually it's looking to more about the back office functions and how we can get the best shared services we can, but maintain our service for our local community.
Yeah, if I can come at that point, it's an example of a partnership. I talked about partnerships being the way to go, and the fire and rescue partnership, I know it's a situation and a service that any talk about change will vex people, but very much the drive here is to maintain the service we have currently got. If we did not do something like that, we would be having to look at cutbacks, and with something as essential as this, that's really not something we could face doing. So we have to look at ways in which we can maintain what we've currently got, hence the partnership. It's an example of the way we're going more widely, frankly.
I mean, it's a bit of a slippery slope, though, isn't it? Because if you've, admittedly, the police are, you know, under that sort of joint control, and there are issues within that, that we experience here at Isle of Wight Radio, let alone sort of, you know, wider in the community. But if you're also going down that route with the fire and rescue, surely it's just a few steps towards saying, well, we might as well do that with the council.
Wait till you start seeing it happening with the health service, Lucy. Then you've got real problems. I think the realistic picture is this. The Isle of Wight cannot afford to sustain services at the level that they've been delivered at in the past with the size of population that we have and the income that the place generates. So we have to look at things like this. And I think it's going to be very interesting when this scenario starts to hit other organisations, which I think Jill would be able to have a voice on this because she's very experienced in that area. I've got a feeling that won't be too far behind, quite frankly.
But I think what people have got to realise is that this comes back to the way central government is treating local authorities.
Absolutely.
The level of cutback is appalling. And there really seems to be scant consideration of how that is affecting people in their local communities. Not being that political today, but we had a quote from Andrew Turner, I think it was last year, he said, well, local authorities have got to cut their cloth. Yet at the same time, he was part of a vote in the House of Commons and votes in the House of Commons whereby he was taking that cloth away. So we're really being driven to a situation that for, I think, probably all of us in this room is unpalatable. But we've got to do something, and our drive is actually to try and maintain what we can for the island as the island.
Yeah, no government ever won an election being generous or kind to local authorities.
Dave, it's your party. How do you feel as a local councillor representing the Conservatives?
I'm quite comfortable as a local councillor representing Conservatives because if I just go to the national picture, I now know that the economy is picking up. I know that employment's at its lowest ever.
Not on the Isle of Wight.
Well, let's take it as a whole. The Isle of Wight has its problems, and we particularly have a youth problem. And for me, I would love to see no youth unemployment on the island, because I think, and then that links into the economy. We've got a good tourism development board, but I think we could do more. I think we should really look at how we could offer in due course the opportunity for every youngster on the Isle of Wight to either go into an apprenticeship or to go into university or to go into work, because the numbers are not that high, and I think that we could really score on. At a local level, I think it's about looking out for the best interests of the community. And I know Jonathan and I and Steve have already been talking and had some information around how we could perhaps enable the council to run things differently. Because at the moment, as Steve rightly says, you're cutting down, cutting down, cutting down, and the way we do it now isn't going to be sustainable. But doing things differently may well be. Enabling through commissioning a different approach to the way the council runs might actually be a solution we can look for, and certainly I'm very interested in what that's going to play out like.
Okay, don't forget you can comment. I'll come to you, Jill. Don't forget you can comment on everything that's being said today. Find us on Twitter at iWhite Radio or on Facebook or indeed on the text IW a space in your message. Send it into 81222. Jill, sorry.
I think when we originally realised that these services would be coming down to town and parish councils, you know, initially it's not happy, but people have taken really innovative approaches in towns and parishes now and realise that it's they're our areas, they're our towns, they're our villages, and we need to find our own solutions around it. And I think what has been quite inspirational is the support that we have had from local people. But as long as you spell it out, as long as you say, if we do this, this is what your preset might go up by. And you have to be totally honest and give people the choice about what they really want to support and what they feel they don't need to support. And certainly the approach we took in my parish, and I know a lot of others did. And I think that's the thing to do, is not just to engage the town and parishes, but for us as town and parishes to engage our residents so that we get buy-in to the things we really want to look after and what are important to us. And very surprised, even when we put our precept up locally, we were quite supported in a lot of that.
Do you think people are fully on what it means, though? Have people got a genuine understanding of council tax and how that pans out? You hear this headline figure of it going up by X amount per bandy property. But do you think people really grasp that that is only the Isle of Wight Council part of it, that there is also extra money for your parish council, town council, there's extra money for the police? And actually, that headline figure really means nothing because it's going to cost you a lot more.
That's why we felt we had to be really honest. That if we put our precept up by X, this is what it would mean on top of your council tax. And I think that's what's been happening across the island. And we've got some really small parish councils, and for them it's quite a struggle to do that. But it's the only way is to be completely honest about what you're doing and what you're supporting.
And
the public should have that.
And Jill, I think this is something that you and I agreed on from very early on in this discussion, that we need to look at this precept idea as if it were a kind of a per capita payment on the part of each resident of the Isle of Wight. Because, as Jonathan said earlier on, the minute you get into that discussion where certain people are prepared to pay for certain things very much in their own area, I think you've kind of lost what makes the Isle of Wight a really special place to live. Because for me, one of the real attractions of being here is that we kind of sense a real communal spirit here. And I've been disappointed, I have to be honest, Lucy, with some of the discussions that I've had with some towns and parishes where I've heard them say, well, we haven't got any beaches. You know, why would we be interested in contributing towards this? And I've kind of had to say, well, you know, you live here, don't you? We all use these things. And of course, many of those places benefit from the tourists that come in and use those facilities anyway. So it's been a disappointment in the discussion, but I think we've got somewhere now, much, much further than we were 6 months ago. And there's much more of a sense of realism, certainly amongst town and parish councils. And I think part of that is exactly as Jill has just said, by going out to the communities and finding out what they consider to be important, we've actually kind of started to make some real ground here.
I'm just going to pick up on what you said there and turn it on its head slightly. So if the argument is, you know, everyone should be contributing, let's bring forward the floating bridge here. You're looking at, perhaps you could clarify, I've heard a figure of 70p banded around for a return journey. I've heard a figure of 40p. I've heard rumours of some kind of sliding scale that involves some kind of smart car. Perhaps you could clarify exactly what people in Cowes and East Cowes are going to have to pay to use the floating bridge.
40p return journey, excluding concession holders, excluding under-18s. What is proposed is that a form of smart card payment system will be introduced. There are quite a lot of little technicalities that need to be worked out in this regard. But when that comes in, the 40p will remain for those who have the smart card. For the occasional user without the smart card, then that's where the 70p comes from. A lot of people have tried to attack it and say it's 70p straight off. It isn't. If you read the papers, it's pretty clear. I'm afraid it's one of those situations where the council, in addition to looking at ways of maintaining services by being innovative, also has to look at those things it has in its portfolio that can generate an income. And the Cowes floating bridge is one of those. And therefore, that is why we're having to go this way. It is just another aspect of the situation we're in.
So, for example, why wouldn't you put a toll on the bridge at Yarmouth? Why could you not have that? That's a moving structure that's not always there. Sometimes it has to go up and down.
It's been recognised as part of the road network, and you wouldn't have the potential for putting a toll on there. That's the difference, and that discussion's always been put forward. You know, and I think you know this, Lucy, because you've been involved in this debate. The water from East Cowes to West Cowes is not regarded as part of the road network. Therefore, it gets treated differently.
There was certainly an argument to make it part of that network as part of the dreaded PFI negotiations, but that didn't work. Otherwise, we'd be, again, in a different position. We're very much having to cope with the cards we're dealt with, and it's not a great hand we're being given.
And so, I mean, in terms of how this smart card's going to roll out, I mean, is it one of these things where if I'm using it every day, I would get a smart card? Or if I just want to pop across to the playground, across the floating bridge, I would have a smart card, but I wouldn't have to use it every day? How does that roll out?
There's still a lot of practicalities to be worked out, but I think the idea is essentially the smart card can be purchased by anyone who wants to benefit from that smart card, and they can when they want to make a journey, whether it's every day, every other day or infrequently, but they know they use it occasionally, then that facility will be available. But as I say, I don't want to get too much into the detail because the detail is still being worked out.
But we are talking effectively about something going through, which is a tax on people in East Cowes particularly, because if you've got commuters going across to the Red Jet, you've got, and that's going to cost, you know, £200 or £300 extra a year for people who want to go to work.
It can't be considered to be a tax, Lucy. It could be considered to be something which might be more onerous towards regular users of that facility, and you might argue that residents of East Cowes are in that boat. But I would say everybody...
Or not in the boat, it, potentially. Not,
possibly. everybody that uses it will be expected to pay for it, so it can't be called as focusing on a certain community. I've heard it said to me, don't know how much I actually recognise this, but someone who lives in Lowtherville, in my ward, would say that they have to pay to get from Ventnor town up to there, because that's just how it is. You know, you travel from one place to another, albeit quite close. And by the way, the charge for doing that journey is significantly more than the 40p return that those people who would be using the floating bridge might be expected if this budget goes through to pay.
All right, and we've got a quick reaction here. Stuart Blackmore, who's the Labour parliamentary candidate for the Isle of Wight, reacting to, Steve, your comment that people think council tax covers all Isle of Wight council services, but mainly it only covers adult social care. Stuart says, did he really say that? Is that really what you meant? I mean, I think questioning whether...
Yeah, we spend £50 million a year on adult social care, and I think council tax brings in about £65 million, yeah. Something like that. So, yes, Stuart.
On Twitter here, Adam the Rich is introducing a smart card system, really going to save money. The cost of implementing, managing it surely exceeds 40p.
Well, as I say, the technicalities have worked out. If those technicalities show that it doesn't stack up, then we have to think again. But the initial discussions are that this would stack up, otherwise it wouldn't have been taken to this stage.
Before we move on, have any of you here travelled on the floating bridge during Cowes Week or Best of All Weekend and got an idea of how that's going to play out when you've got 4,000 people trying to cram on?
As a St Helens resident, it's not part of my regular network. I know I'm probably going to get attacked for saying that, but I am aware of people who use the floating bridge, and I know they're difficult times. But again, that's going to be part of the mix in working out how this is actually put into practice, if it can be.
It would be fair to say, I think, speaking on behalf of Cowes and East Cowes people here, that it's a very different kettle of fish when you get on that floating bridge in the middle of Cowes Week and you don't go anywhere for half an hour, because the amount of people that are cramming onto that, if you've then got to worry about charging foot passengers.
Louisa, the local member for East Cowes, has brought up quite a lot of what she sees are the potential logistic problems, and that's something that we're getting officers to have a look into right now, actually.
But we have other aspects of that around the island. If you're trying to get the fast cat the day after the festival,
we all know it.
You know, there are similar situations.
I think on that is we've got to think a little bit smarter, haven't we? Because we have an economy which does benefit from the people that come to Cowes a week from all over the world, and they do spend a lot of money. If that's going to generate income on the floating bridge, that's a good thing, because it's going to help the economy. Actually, I think we could do an awful lot more to max out the benefits of all those people that come to the island and help our economy. And I know the DMO at the Select Committee meeting last night was actually talking about this. So we can look at that. I feel some sympathy for the people that currently have not had to pay on. I've been across on that East Cowes floating bridge by car and by foot. But at the end of the day, if I'm looking at that, or I'm looking at safety of our kids, or I'm looking at education, we have to make choices, and that's the role of the council. And I think as long as all the aspects have been considered, if the choice is, as it would appear in the budget, that that's what we're going to do, then so be it. I think the important thing is that people have their say, and then the council, who've been elected to do it, make a decision for the best interests of the whole island.
As I feared, we are hurtling towards 2 o'clock. It's already 22, so I'm going to go to another ad break. When we come back, I've got a couple of questions from Isle of Wight Radio listeners.
The Friday Report with Lucy Morgan on Isle of Wight Radio.
Welcome back to the Friday Report. On the show today, then, council leader Jonathan Bacon, deputy leader Steve Stubbings, Conservative group leader Dave Stewart, and Jill Kennett from Freshwater Parish Council, and the chair of the Isle of Wight Association of Local Councils. Community bus service is the next thing that I would like to raise with you all. We've got a question from Debbie. Please could someone clarify the situation regarding the disability bus cards and the new Islander carers card? My daughter has a disability that means she can't go on the bus by herself. She holds a disability bus pass and a new Islander card, which means a carer can go on the bus with her. If you remove that carer's card, she won't be able to get out and about by herself.
No, we're not removing it. We've already pulled that back from the original paper because it was widely recognised by our group that that actually was an onerous and an unreasonable thing for us to be doing. So that one's no longer happening. So welcome to carry on using your Islander card and carers can travel too.
When you talked about removing money from some of these community bus services, there was an assurance that provision would be made, but there was a rather crucial where possible added. Are there any areas that are going to lose out in services?
Some of those services are completely unsustainable, and I'm still having conversations actually with some of the local providers at the moment. I'm very happy to say two or three of them have already come forward with what look to me to be very extremely sustainable plans for carrying on with those services. But I have to tell you, Lucy, we've been in a position with some of those services where it would have actually been cheaper to be using taxis for the number of people that are using them. So, of course, we support community bus services. We think it's really important that people who live in isolated communities have an opportunity to travel. But frankly, some of these, they're not running properly and we need to get them back under control.
Jill. Just on that line, I was meeting yesterday with the Isle of Wight Bus and Rail Users Group, and we're carrying on talking about how services can be maintained. I think it's possibly, and we're still working through the figures, maybe only two services are at risk. The question is, can the service be viable? Can it be run in a viable way? And most of those that are being looked at, there's scope to do that. One thing I haven't mentioned that I do want to mention before the hour's up is that as part of the budget, we are now introducing a large contingency sum so that where a bit of pump priming, a bit of capital assistance to help someone take on a service, help that service to have a sustainable future is there. That's what that money is there for. And we're very keen that people come forward with their suggestions so we can provide that assistance to make those services carry on.
You made a really interesting point there, Lucy, because in the scrutiny panel meeting that we had a couple of weeks ago looking at the budget, one of the kind of recommendations through to the full council meeting is that those people that are vulnerable, those people that do or will experience the impact of some of these changes and are severely, if you like, disadvantaged, can at least be taken into account. And I think Steve and Jonathan have given you an example there of where they've looked at that particular aspect you raised. And I think that's where, you know, the councils are trying to be caring, but at the same time, they've got to do what's realistic. Steve talked about the viability of the buses. I mean, my area is the number 6 bus, and I think that's not at risk in the short term, certainly, because it is a viable service in the summer particularly. But I've heard stories of some of the buses where they're just not being used, and it is a case of use it or lose it, really, unfortunately.
Jill, I want to bring you in here, because in your capacity as Freshwater Parish Council, I mean, that's a particularly, potentially hardest-hit rural area there, and there's the Fit bus in
that
area.
Yeah, we have the Fit bus in the West White, and that was funded, that's run by volunteers. It's funded by fundraising and has also been supported by local parish and town councils, Freshwater, Yarmouth and Totland in particular. It's used heavily, really. It's a bit of a lifeline, particularly for some of our older people, because it is so local. Again, we're reliant on the volunteers giving up their time to run that for us and for the people who've set that up to continue to fundraise for it. But it works really well. And when the whole community bus thing happened a few years ago, we decided to go down that route, really, and that's how the Fit Bus came about.
Is that a model that you would like to see, you would champion elsewhere on the island?
Yeah, I think you've got to have support for it, and you've got to have the volunteers who are going to be willing to do the driving for you. But yeah, it works incredibly well in the West White, and it's made local shops, etc., far more accessible to some of our people than they would otherwise be. And of course, they also do special trips out. They go out to the larger stores in Newport, or if there's special events on. So it's much loved, I think, is how I'd describe it in the West White.
It's a model I'd like to see replicated around the island, because it's an absolutely brilliant example of how these services work properly when they're managed and run properly.
All right, now Shanklin is the next subject on the agenda. This is a question from Carol. I keep hearing about the possibility of the Shanklin lift closing. If this is true, just how do they, I think they mean you, expect visitors staying in hotels in Shanklin to visit the seafront? Visitors, both young and old, can't always manage either Osborne Steps, Hope Hill or the incline along the Chine. Please have a thought for not only visitors and residents, but the traders along the Esplanade in Shanklin. Without a Shanklin lift, how viable is Shanklin?
I haven't heard anything about Shanklin Lift closing. What I do know is that there is a fairly significant capital sum possibly required in the not-too-distant future to ensure its long-term viability. My understanding was that there were discussions taking place with potential business partners in relation to the continued operation, but it is on our capital contingency list, and I know that there is an amount set aside, albeit that it isn't allocated yet, for the future provision to ensure that Shanklin Lift stays open. So I'd have to say, unless Jonathan knows something,
there are questions about its, I think, the cost of repairs and its viability. So I don't want people to get an impression that there aren't questions over the lift. I think it'd be dishonest to say that. But as Steve says, money has been set aside. It is recognised as a potentially very important service. But as with a lot of things, I'm sorry, starting to repeat myself a bit now, but we've got to make sure that if we are pumping a lot of money into it, it's to something that's got a sustainable future, as well as the value it provides. But yeah, it's under discussion at the moment, and certainly no proposal to bring it to a termination that I'm aware of.
Putting my hat on the scrutiny chair, I was aware of the concerns around that, and there have been various discussions. I think there's two things that people need to pick up on. One is that particular lift needs to be maintained to a standard, and that's a capital cost that's got to be considered. But I also understand, and I haven't done the research yet, that the actual running of the lift in terms of people going up and down, it actually makes a small profit. So those two points have to be considered. But I again, like you, knowing what Shanklin's like and the lifts, and there's, you know, I might be able to walk down around the side. I'm sure there's a lot of people would prefer to come up the lift. So I think everybody appreciates that it does help the economy and business of Shanklin Seafront. It's just about making sure we can afford to keep it going in the way we should. But I haven't heard lots of negativity towards that one, and I'm quite reassured by Steve's comments here today, so we'll follow that up.
Okay, then. Let's move on, if we can, because time is against us. Let's talk Visit Isle of Wight tourism and funding of tourism on the island. Tourism identified as one of your five important areas of the budget. You've sort of, you know, already said, yes, we appreciate that it's one of the most important things for the island. And yet here you are theoretically taking away £330,000. No. Go on, tell me more.
There's a proposal by one of the Labour members to take that funding away and put that towards some other areas, which in fact are already potentially covered by the contingency I referred to earlier. We have an existing agreement with Visit Isle of Wight to assist them, and the £340,000 funding for next year is for that purpose, and I don't see it changing. The agreement after that point has been altered because we recognise the financial difficulties. So, yes, funding will be going down from 2016-17, but alongside that, there are going to be ongoing discussions, and I suspect this came out of the Select Committee last night to some extent. I'm afraid I wasn't able to be there. There are discussions as to how we can assist Visit Isle of Wight to be sustainable as an essential part of the island and the island's business.
I mean, there
I
is
think it's also a bit of a daft proposal to suggest that you fund those things that the proposal suggests by taking that money away, because it is only in the budget for 1 year. What do you do after that? So it's not a very well-founded proposal, I'm afraid.
In favour to the other councillors, we did invite questions today from Labour's Geoff Lumley and Alan Hollands, UKIP's Daryl Pitcher and Graham Perks, and Lib Dem's Reg Barry. We didn't have any response from them in terms of questions coming in.
You might get a response now I've said that.
In terms of you know, whether businesses should be paying more, are you disappointed as councillors sitting there looking on that David Thornton was on Isle of Wight Radio earlier this week, and he said the private sector invests £450,000, and they started at a stage where they were investing £70,000 or £80,000, yeah. And quite quickly that money's gone up to £450,000.
Absolutely.
It suggests the money is there. Yeah. He also said there's 400 odd businesses compared to 400 odd businesses that are joining in with this and putting money in the pot, and other 400 businesses that aren't. Does that frustrate you as councillors, saying, well, hang on, you know, business has got the cash?
I'd like to just turn it around, because I think DMO and that have done a fantastic job for the island. And I think if Mr. Blackmore's listening, because I think he's got a Labour involvement, he might want to think about what he's trying to cut there. That they are really trying hard for the island. They've got a conference coming up soon with over 300 different people attending. I think that you'll find that the DMO
certainly earns their cash in terms of what they're doing for the island. Our reputation off island, which is what they deal with quite a bit, has certainly been raised by the innovative approaches they've taken. And I think, for me, I think it's been real value for money. Jonathan's absolutely right. It was always clear to them that the investment that was made was time limited. They've worked to that, and I don't think now is the time to change the goalposts, because we want them to keep doing the good work they're doing. And I don't know if you'd agree with that.
Absolutely right. And we don't Welsh on deals. There's an arrangement there which everybody knew about. This administration is certainly not in the business of suddenly ripping the rug out from under people. What is very clear to me from conversations I've been party to and heard about is that the DMO are doing a tremendous amount of work in ensuring their long-term sustainability. Mm. And part of that, Lucy, is around what you've just talked about. I think David's doing some tremendous work in involving the business community in learning to recognise the value of tourism to them. And I don't think there's going to be a problem. I suspect by the time we have this conversation again next year, we'll find that the DMO is pretty much supporting itself without the significant grant that the Isle of Wight Council currently contributes.
Go on, Jonathan.
I was going to say the buy-in of local tourist businesses is perhaps an interesting parallel with the buy-in of town and parish councils to council services. And I think that is something that will grow, and that will give Visit Isle of Wight the life of its own that it's nearly got already. Yeah. But it's such a valuable service. I don't think people realise the value, because an awful lot of the work they do is off-island. It's not that visible here to a lot of people, and therefore it's not appreciated, but it is incredibly valuable work for the island economy.
We've got a few tweets I want to come to here. Simon says, but cutting funding to community buses, isolating elderly residents is perfectly acceptable, ? He's in response here to the Labour proposal to cut funding now to Visit Isle of Wight being daft, but he's saying, but you know, should you be cutting funding to community buses?
No, Simon, we shouldn't be cutting off elderly residents in those areas.
All right, and we've also got somebody here, KWE is their handle. Perhaps should be charging enough to cover costs, not to make money, in relation to the floating bridge. That seems like a fair suggestion, maybe.
It is a perfectly sound suggestion, but as I said before, being in the position we are, and we don't like being in this position, we don't like doing almost anything that we're proposing in this budget, I think you could say, but we have to look at those areas where there is an income that can support other areas of the council's operation.
I hate to say it, but we have pretty much run out of time. A final thought from all of you, and we are going to be slightly late.
I'll give a quick invite to Steve, because I went to the Town and Parish Council clerks meeting the other night, and Steve has clearly done some good work around going and visiting various town and parish councils. But the invite and the challenge I'm hoping he'll accept is I think we should invite in the town and parish council clerks and maybe the chairs and actually sit down with them for next year and say, right, we've seen how we need to move services around. Let's have a bit of a longer and more involved dialogue, and I can see you acknowledging that, where we can actually work with them. Because I think that, as Steve says, I think if people understand exactly what's involved and have a say, they'll probably buy in more to the suggestion. And maybe that's if Steve's up for that, then I think we should.
I'd say I would absolutely agree with that. I think, you know, you've got to be part of the solution and not an afterthought. Not that I think we were an afterthought, but it did feel a bit rushed around the consultation, but it was. Mm. And I think that's a really good idea. Town clerks now, their job is really changing, because as we take on more services, some town and councils are small businesses now, so it's a very different ball game that we're going into, and I would support that.
Yep, I'm up for it.
Brilliant. Watch this space. We'll report back to you. Thank you very much indeed to all of you. Council Leader Jonathan Bacon, Deputy Leader Steve Stubbings, Conservative Group Leader Dave Stewart and Jill Kennett from the Isle of Wight Association of Local Councils. Thank you very much
for your time.
Remind me, gentlemen, when is the Big Crunch budget meeting?
5 p.m. Wednesday evening. It's an 25th hour earlier than usual.
5 p.m. at County Hall. Are visitors welcome?
Very welcome indeed. Come and see what we actually do.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for your time. That has been the Friday Report today. On your radio next, Tom Stroud here taking you through the afternoon, bringing you up to date with all the travel. High-speed service, by the way, running a one-boat service between Cowes and Southampton currently on RedJets. Tom will have the very latest for you. Thank you very much for all of your tweets and your comments and your questions on Facebook today. We will have another Friday Report next week.
Friday Report with Lucy Morgan on Isle of Wight Radio.